This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Alan Bergman, parent, advocate, and national and Illinois leader in disability issues. But first, disability news for the week of March 31st, 2025. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services says it will dismantle the Administration for Community Living, which manages programs helping people with disabilities accessing services in their community and advocating for people with disabilities, older adults, family members, and caregivers. HHS announced that the programs in the Administration for Community Living will be split across the Administration for Children and Families, Assistant Secretary for Planning and Evaluation, and Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and they will lay off about 10,000 employees, downsizing its workforce to 62,000 full-time employees. The current 28 HHS divisions will be reduced to 15, and regional offices will be cut from 10 to 5. Secretary of Health and Human Services Robert F. Kennedy Jr. said, quote, "We're going to eliminate an entire alphabet soup of departments and agencies while preserving their core functions. We're going to do more with less," end quote. The Administration for Community Living was established in 2012. It funds and works with over 2,500 community organizations nationwide, including Centers for Independent Living, Protection and Advocacy Systems, Developmental Disability Councils, and more, according to Allison Barkoff, a professor at George Washington University who led the Administration for Community Living under the Biden administration. Barkoff said, quote, "People might not have heard of the Administration for Community Living, but they've probably benefited from ACL's programs. I don't see how you can have that level of cuts in staff without seeing an impact on programs and services," end quote. She named programs including respite care services, special education, Medicaid benefits, employment assistance for transition age youth, and in-home supports and services. Barkoff also said, quote, "The ACL has had a seat at the table with the secretary, with leaders of programs. If ACL is broken up, they will not have that seat at the table. The disability voice is being lost," end quote. Advocates from several disability organizations said they were shocked by the move to dismantle the Administration for Community Living, particularly given that it was established as a centralized hub in order to promote efficiency and prevent duplication. The Food and Drug Administration approved a medication last week known as Vicat XR to treat hyperphagia, or an incessant feeling of hunger, in kids and adults with Prader-Willi syndrome. The constant desire to eat is a characteristic of Prader-Willi, a genetic condition that affects about 350,000 people in the world, according to the Prader-Willi Syndrome Association USA. It can lead to obesity and other health issues. Individuals with Prader-Willi often experience symptoms starting in infancy, such as weak muscle tone, difficulty with sucking, swallowing, and other physical issues. They also experience learning difficulties, developmental delays, and behavior problems. Dr. Jennifer Miller is a professor of pediatric endocrinology at the University of Florida, who specializes in treating children and adults with the syndrome, and who is a principal investigator in the Vicat XR development program. Miller said, quote, "The FDA approval of Vicat XR is an incredible achievement for the entire PWS community. Families of people with PWS have been prisoners in their own homes because of the need to provide constant eyes on supervision 24/7, with access to food being completely restricted," end quote. Vicat XR is expected to be available for individuals with Prader-Willi as young as age 4, and that starts in April. And finally, people in New Jersey who have been diagnosed with autism, hearing, or other impairments can now have their condition noted on their driver's license to help avoid misunderstandings with police during traffic stops and other encounters. The voluntary program allows drivers to have a notation on their driver's license or opt for a pink card to hand to police. The new program alerts officers up front and provides education for police on how to interact with people with autism and those with hearing issues or other impairments. The notation appears as the number 5 in the restrictions section on a driver's license or state-issued ID card. The MVC also will issue the person a Code 5 description card or pink card that they must carry with their license or ID. The pink card indicates if the person has autism, a communication disorder, or both. New Jersey joins about 12 other states that offer similar driver's license notations. And that's the news for this week.
Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star. Baby, you can drive my car. And baby, I love you.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm joined today by my friend Alan Bergman, who is a parent like I am, an advocate, and an Illinois leader in disability issues and nationally across the country. Alan has been involved for many, many years in trying to do better for people with disabilities. Welcome to the program, Alan.
Thank you, Vicki. Pleasure to be back and speak with you.
It's not a very positive time to be speaking with me, I know, but I know that you've been active and are anxious to help people become aware of some of the issues that are going on in our country and in our state these days. So, first of all, I wanted to mention that you are going to be doing a keynote for a local conference. Maybe we should start out by talking about that, because it is one of the many things that you're doing.
Yeah, I'll be happy to talk about that. And then I want to do come back to your comments about ACL and my good friend and colleague, Allison Barkoff. But yes, thank you. I will be in Champaign on April 24th for the Illinois Center for Transition and Work, sponsored by the university, their annual symposium, targeted primarily towards special educators, vocational rehabilitation folks, school district personnel, and certainly families and self-advocates. And I'm really honored to have been asked to keynote that this year, given all the things that we knew prior to what's happened in the last month or two. And the focus of this conference, which is very exciting, is the students with more extensive support needs, and that to reach competitive integrated employment. So we're not talking about labeling people, putting people into day program and busy work, because we know with all the evidence-based research, if we do things competently and with fidelity, which has become my favorite word in the last 5 years, that we know with customized employment, zero reject, zero failure. I will say that again. Zero reject and zero failure. So I have been asked to keynote, and the title of my keynote, appropriate for all of this, Employment First, More Than a Slogan. It is time, to quote Shakespeare, suit the action to the words. So I will be laying out for the audience in my keynote, where are we today compared to what the laws tell us, what the research tells us, what best practice tells us, and what some exemplary school districts or states are doing compared to the rest. And I will start by, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, and can you tell us all of that? Because I would like to hear it.
Well, I'll tell you as much as I can.
Okay.
The opening that I will have, though, is the single best definition for one word for an adult with disabilities in still 2024, last year we had data, is one word. It's called poverty. Mm-hmm. 24.9% of adults with all types of disabilities are living in poverty on benefits, no work, no encouragement to work, no opportunities to work, not even volunteering, interning, or anything, because of stigma, low expectations, and the poor quality of education that the law said they didn't get what the law said they were supposed to get.
Right. So and really fear of work, because they think they're going to lose their benefits, or they've been told that they will.
And that is another massive myth. Thank you. Mm-hmm. We have had benefits counseling since 1999. We have had all kinds of opportunities for people to do all kinds of work and get incentives to work. In Illinois, it's called the Medicaid Health Benefits for Workers with Disabilities. I wrote this legislation when I was in D.C. So there are all kinds of ways to work and not lose your benefits, and in fact, potentially enhance them by going from what's called SSI to SSDI when you earn enough quarters, and then you're going to get Medicare instead of Medicaid, and you can earn more. And yeah, you could today, in round numbers, you can go to work in Illinois 20 hours a week for $15 an hour on an SSI, Supplemental Security Income check, and still keep a little of that check and all of the earnings that you have, and you come out way ahead. Mm-hmm. But this is a myth often taught by, I'm sorry to say, special ed teachers who haven't been brought up to training on what's possible. So I'm glad you raised that. That is another barrier, and I define it as a brick wall, because we'll come in and talk about all this best practice, and then we'll hear, oh, but Johnny can't go to work because if he works more than 5 hours a week, he'll lose his benefits, and then if he loses his job, he'll be homeless. Absolutely untrue, and we must stop this. That's 50-year-old stuff. We don't have to do that today, but we have to help people understand that the field has moved dramatically. And to give you an example of how sad things are here in Illinois, I'll look at the adult side for a minute, and that's what we have to base this on. In the Illinois Division for Developmental Disabilities, and this is a national data set, in 2022, 3.8% of all of the people receiving services for home and community-based services were in employment or getting employment services. The national average is 23.5. So we're about 1/6 of that, and that's not a great number. Washington State, 82.9. Oklahoma, 68.6. Delaware, 58.3. And even neighbors, Michigan, 35.6. Ohio, 36.1. Minnesota, 32.7. Wisconsin, 26.7. And so on. This is pathetic. This is an indictment of, first, our public school system, low expectations, and, frankly, our adult system in Illinois that is not with best practice and truly incentivizing, even though we have a governor's proclamation going back for employment first. Words are cheap. One thing you learn is put your money where your mouth is, mm-hmm. and the money is not there. So let's go back now to the school thing and tell you part of why this is going on is where we are in inclusion in the schools, because that's a critical piece. This is the best data from the federal government, 2021, and they have to report to Congress every year, massive report. In the classification of students with intellectual disability, all levels, 16.9% of all of those students are in segregated schools or residential schools. In Wisconsin, it's 3.7%. Mm-hmm. Indiana, 3.6%. Kentucky, 2.5%. So if those kids are isolated, segregated, in their own special schools with low expectations, who's ever going to think about employment or anything meaningful for them? So we've got to get back into the schools and say, get with it. Why aren't you doing what the law requires, was this least restrictive environment, an individualized education program, not a plan, and it is an individualized one, and that, again, is being won in some lawsuits these days, even at the Supreme Court level, when a case was brought, and the wonderful Supreme Court Justice himself wrote the opinion and said, de minimis goals and an IEP is not what special education is about. The IEP is more than a piece of paper. What he was really saying, and I commend him for this, it's not just the form to fill in the blanks and sign. So the auditors come by and say, oh, you got three measurable goals. You're going to go from a 2.2 reading level to a 2.3 reading level for somebody who's 17. That's a waste of their time and the teacher's time. We have got to get to understand what the law requires, and particularly in transition. It says in the law, a coordinated set of activities, result-oriented, academic, and functional achievement. That means things can be done outside of the school building, like learning how to read street signs, how to ride the bus, how to open a bank account. It's in the law. It's in the law. And if teacher unions don't like it, that's their problem. I'm sorry. And then further, the goals are post-secondary education, voc ed, integrated employment, supported employment, and this is the big shift now that's in every federal law. We have rejected the deficit medical fix-it model. We're not denying the disability. Every child has strengths, preferences, and interests that is in special education, that is in vocational rehabilitation, and it is in Medicaid, home and community-based services now. It's amazing that we have all this alignment, that we must look at the gifts that somebody brings, not their deficits. I don't know about you, but when I introduce myself, I don't open by saying the things that I don't know how to do. I brag about the things I do. But if somebody will ask me, well, in this project, Alan, we need you to do, an example would be Excel spreadsheets. I say, no, I don't, but I've got a subcontractor who can do those for me. I don't do those, okay? But how do we introduce people with disabilities generally? Oh, well, here's Johnny, and he can't do this, and he can't add, and he can't whatever, whatever, but we'd like you to hire him. Oh, that's going to go a long way with an employer. Mm-hmm. They don't want to know your deficits. They know how you're going to contribute to the business. And the same is true in special education. I'm not denying disability for anybody, but it's a characteristic. And again, we stigmatize. You met one person with Down syndrome, they're all the same. You met somebody with CP, they're all the same. Oh, really? So if I met somebody 5'2", everybody I meet 5'2" is the same? That's the analogies we need for people to understand. It's a characteristic. It does not define you. What defines you is where you can make your contribution, which is the purpose of our school.
So, Alan, what are other states doing that are making it different there? The states that are well above where Illinois is in employment, how are they handling this differently?
Well, I'll take the best state right now, which is Washington State. A number of years ago, they had a woman who's now retired. Her name was Dr. Jane Boone. She was the director of the Developmental Disabilities Agency. She got the federal government to agree after the state passed a law that people fought her over, but she was determined to get it done, that in fact, when you enter the adult system in Washington State, you don't get to say, I don't want to work. You must spend the first 9 months looking at employment. Internships, volunteering, job training and tryout. And guess what? When folks get a taste of work and a paycheck, what do you think they want to keep doing?
They
want to work.
Yeah.
So in turn, parents know this. Schools know this. They're reforming a lot of the school stuff. The university's doing training and technical assistance. And they're upgrading how they do education. And employers love it. Microsoft, you've heard of that little company.
Mm-hmm.
They have a campus out there with thousands of employees. They have been an early employer of people with disabilities, and they often would have the job coaches come in to do support or whatever. They now have, and I believe it's 5,000 people employed on their campus, about 200 people with disabilities scattered across. They're not grouped. They decided it was in their best interest. They have free full-time job coaches on their staff who just float around to make sure people are doing well and help enhance their performance and get them career advancement like anybody else. So it can be done, when you have a set of expectations that are high, when you train staff to do it the correct way, and then you measure the results. And so Washington State's been a lead now probably 7 years. They're always in the mid to high 80s. And that's phenomenal. And then we have some provider agencies in this country. You can look them up. Your folks can. It's called Briggs & Associates. They're in Georgia. They just got the award. I think you're familiar with CQL, the Council on Quality and Leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Very high standards. The most excellent employment provider in the United States of America. Got the award in 2022. They have been at it since 1990. They've never owned a building. They've done customized employment, supported employment, and they do supported employment, IPS, individualized placement and support for people with mental health conditions. Their success rate, hang on to this one, over 30 years, 85% of the people they have ever worked with are still working. They may be in other jobs, they may be making more money, and whatever. They have a relationship with employers that is amazing. They've gotten awards from the Better Business Bureau. They do a phenomenal job. Why? Because they don't skip a step. Some of the people they work with, it takes 6 months to get their plan done the right way. But when they get it done, and it's done well. So we have examples of people who know how to do this when they are clear what their business is. Oregon had a lawsuit about, and this was 10 years ago now, and it was brought by a gentleman named Mr. Lane, who was in a sheltered workshop, subminimum wage. He wanted to get a real job. And the state said, sorry, we don't have any room in the community. You'll have to wait. He filed a lawsuit with disability rights, like our for equality. He got seven of his colleagues to join him. Didn't go far. The United States Department of Justice got involved. And Alison Barkoff, who you mentioned earlier, used to be with the Center for Public Representation, an outside law firm that mm-hmm. worked with justice. She went out there. I was subpoenaed as an expert witness. And amazingly, the judge was, sorry, much better than our litigious judge here, got Allison's beautiful legal argument that although the ADA doesn't apply to schools, it does apply to adult services, by not promoting inclusion and high expectations in the schools, they were putting those students at risk of a life of segregation and dependency, and the judge bought it. As a result, the only transition manual in this country I've ever seen, jointly written by a state education agency and DD agency, is in Oregon. Since then, they have upped their numbers by double in 4 years.
Wow.
So when you get clear what your job is, and if you have to have a court order, okay, and it was beautiful. When the governor heard this was going on and was concerned that, you know, the counties weren't doing a good job, their service coordination is done through county government, and they were already working to remedy this before the final order, he was hearing that the counties aren't even referring people for employment. So he called in, you'll love this one, the executive director of the Oregon Counties Association. I called him on a Friday, said, you'll be in my office Monday. In his office on Monday, he said, here's what we're up against. Here's what we're trying to do. It's the right thing to do. Tell your counties they better get their service coordinators trained in the next 60 days and be doing employment as a priority, or I will go to the legislature and get your contracts taken away, and the state will take over service coordination. How's that?
Wow. Wow, yeah, that's amazing.
Well, yeah, but it happened, and it's still happening, and they're not. No state is perfect, but every state is working at it. This state really doesn't. We have data, I'm not going to go through it now, that starting transition at 14 gets you about 22% better results than starting at 16. The law says you must start at 16, but this is research from an economist at Kent State University, whether we're looking at people on the autism spectrum or intellectual disability. There is a significant difference, and I don't like to use percentages. I like to talk about people when you're using percentages. So if you start at 14 with ID, you get 74 people a job. If you start at 16, you only get 57. That's 17 more people who get employment by the time they leave if you start at 14. talk about a bang for the buck for the school district and a taxpayer. All of this stuff is a winner, a winner, and a winner. And we need to be talking that way now. I did 20 years ago when people didn't like it, about return on the taxpayer's investment. We don't want daycare. We don't want babysitting. We want outcomes. The reason you go to public school for any kid is to be able to learn how to become a contributing member of adult society. Mm-hmm. That's why we have school. We want the same outcome for kids with disabilities, regardless of complexity.
But
so it's all there.
But in school, the goal for, you know, kindergarten through 12th grade is to fix the disability, to fix
right.
the person, and not yeah. teach them how to survive in the world.
And so the question is, why are they not getting training and technical assistance with what the law now says? Because mm-hmm. the law through IDEA has been amended several times. And here's the other thing, last point. The original special ed law, and you probably know this, but most people don't, is not what is referred to as an unfunded mandate. It is a civil rights law. 22 cases were brought before we got the law in 1975, based on the 14th Amendment of equal protection, due process, and deprivation of liberty. The legislation doesn't say you get a free, appropriate public education subject to federal money being available. It's a civil rights law, and everybody needs to understand that, and the families need to demand that at the IEPs, and if they have to file complaints, sorry, file a complaint or call Equip for Equality and file a formal complaint, get a lawyer, because schools are getting away with terrible stuff, and everybody loses, including ultimately the person, the community, and the taxpayer.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to do it the right way. Everybody wins if we do it well. Change your headset. Change your expectation. Go look and listen to the people who are doing it and get the training so you know what to do, because we've been doing this well for a number of years. Congress even said in some of their opening sections of the law, you need to have high expectations, okay? They need to be prepared to lead productive and independent adult lives. They slammed the schools when they rewrote the law in 2004 after 29 years. It's been impeded by low expectations, insufficient focus on applying replicable research. And I'm going to put this, these are slides that I will be using, citing the legislation. This is not ideologue from an organization. This is the law passed by the United States Congress. Prepare them for further education, employment, and independent living. IDEA 2004. That's 20 plus years ago, Vicki, and mm-hmm. we're not doing it.
It's
it's not the kids' fault. It's not their family's fault. It's the systems which don't seem to want to change their old ways of doing stuff, because they might have to learn how to work a little bit differently and yeah. harder.
And they all say, you know, Illinois never changes without a lawsuit. So, you know, what is the next step? Is that a lawsuit of, you know, class action lawsuit of parents who have kids in school right now?
There are people talking about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to wait and see what's happening in Washington and whether we'll still have recourse with oversight from the Department of Education and Office of Civil Rights and all of that. Because if that gets delegated to the states, oh my God, I can't think like that right now.
Mm, yeah.
That's another issue. Parents need to let people in Congress know, don't break up the Department of Education. Don't make any cuts to Medicaid. Don't destroy the administration on community living.
Right.
These have all served people with disability well. They have a role and responsibility. You can't just break this stuff up and believe that if you just give money to the states, everything's going to be hunky-dory. It won't be.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Alan. I know that you're a busy man, but we need to talk more often, because you do have a wealth of information about the systems and the people that are involved, and I would love to hear more. So thank you again, Alan Bergman. You can hear him on April 24th. At the I Hotel, if you're interested, there's information that I'll put on the Facebook page for you to get in touch. Thank you so much, Alan.
Thank you, Vicki. Have a good one. Bye now.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week. No, I'm staying.